WSUFradio.com with Lou and I. Our 32nd show, Lou.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
You've done some without me. You've done some first, right, with the socialist?
Yeah, when he wasn't a socialist, yeah. And I tried my best to reform him, and I think I succeeded because now he wants to be a physician.
Yeah.
And like I told you, he was going for broke, you know? Yeah. So he's trying to represent himself in that manner. He wanted more money from me, and I offered him 75 cents an hour. I mean, 75 cents a minute for the 60 minutes he was with me, and he told me to go pound sand. Look, now he's going to prove me wrong by becoming a physician. So you were telling me as a topic of today.
Uh-huh. Yes.
That you admitted that, you know, sitting there in your boxer shorts watching Caesar today on the films.
I finished working. First of all, I have to say that I got the edit from the publisher, the editor's version of my book from the publisher yesterday that I have to work on, you know, get it just perfect ahead of its release.
You mean you have to take the Spanglish out of it? Or?
No,
you showed your Cubano side. What's up?
I'm strictly the English literature.
Yes.
And
could you actually write a book in Spanish or no?
No.
No way.
No chance.
So either could I. Yeah. I would get all the accent. I mean, I could speak it, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
Write it.
No. I translated my dad's books. You know,
but from Spanish to English.
From Spanish to English,
yeah. And you had to use a thesaurus for the accents. There's words in
what accent?
Well, there's words in Spanish that without the accent is one meaning with the
accent.
Oh,
the accent marks.
Oh, excuse me for not saying marks.
I thought you meant like, well, yes, this is my father's book.
No, man. Oh, you mean his accent? No. I mean the.
I got accent marks, yes.
Yeah, the accent mark. I mean, my God, there's words that are completely different definitions.
No, of course.
So you successfully did that, and you did you have help? That's not easy.
No, it was tough, and I did some translation work.
Did it get you into the groove to write your first book, or did you already written?
No, that was this was dad died in 2008.
And am I supposed to assume that your books were after 2008?
They're going on now. I just
okay, but you have several of them. I had to assume you were.
But they're like 2 years apart.
2 years apart, and your first book was what year?
That would be 2018.
Oh, so you're a total late bloomer,
right? I was writing screenplays in Hollywood before that.
Yeah, I get it now.
And wow. then I became a kind of like an exile because, you know, I'm kind of a. Yeah, Hollywood.
Conservative Hollywood person doesn't survive too long.
Hollywood doesn't want me, you know, because I'm a, you know, when Trump came into the scene.
Well, I think Hollywood imploded, period.
Yeah. And
the Oscars imploded.
But my friends, I had really close friends. You
and
know,
they all shut you down.
They have shut me down like so fast. Just because
what makes Hollywood so Bolshevik?
They're
not really free spirited, so that isn't the reason.
No, but it's not
they're
just
very narrow in their views.
It's a lefty mentality. They will unfriend you, and
okay, but you're not going deep enough. This is what frustrates with you. You got to go into the intellect. They're just like that. No, I'm not satisfied with that definition because I know they're politically bipolar, and I can drill it down to their. To their very bipolarity, step by step by step by step, and I can intellectually have an argument.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't be. No, they won't listen.
I'm not saying that I can convert them.
You can't. No, you
politically
can't.
Bipolar people.
They won't listen. They'll shut down. They'll short circuit and they'll ban you. And that's what's happened to friends in D.C. also. You know, just
yeah. I, there was a man in the parking lot just recently where I told him, "Do you know that it's?" He was complaining about. Trump contesting the election, I go, are you aware that every Democratic president who lost, from Al Gore to Hillary Clinton that we know of immediately, contested the elections as well?
Yeah.
And they had congressmen bring it to the matters to the Electoral College Counting Committee in Congress. Why is it any different with Trump? The only difference is that Trump had a legal obligation by law, by the Constitution, to preserve and make sure that the elections were transparent and fair.
Right.
It's part of the executive branch.
And he couldn't do it.
And the court system abandoned him.
Yeah.
Now, someone just testified in the Elections Commission in Georgia in the Fannie Willis depositions that have come out so far.
Right.
He said, well, the reason why I voted against certification of the results in Georgia, and although I was the minority, it was a fact that Georgia did not count 200,000, did not verify 200,000 ballots.
No, it's a disaster.
And the truth is coming out. The truth will set us free is coming out that this election was stolen.
Yeah, it was a mess. And
people don't think, they're so brain dead. Liberals, you're more brain dead than we are. You actually think we think he won the popular vote. Well, if he didn't win the popular vote against Hillary, we sure didn't think he was going to win against Biden. But the election was decided by 78,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's easy to rig at 3 in the morning in swing states.
Well, the point is that the left, for whatever reason, cannot take just logic or reason or reality.
But that's the part I don't like. I don't like you say for whatever reason. I'd like you to say there's got to be a reason.
That would go into the ethos. Yeah, the psychosis of
that's what I want to discuss here. I have my theory. What's yours?
But why would they? But here's what's astonishing me. Some of these guys.
Why I desired to find out the truth? Yes, I can talk to their kids.
No, it's just people like me and my friends who have also been, banned and
how many in percentage wise? Let's say your 10 closest guys in Hollywood. How many were banned? How many are still surviving?
How many banned me?
No. How many? Let me rephrase that. Of the 10, your closest friend.
Yeah.
What's the ratio of conservative to liberal? 8 to 2? 7 to 3?
8 to 2.
Okay, and all 8 banned you? And 2 of you guys had to run, skip town.
7 banned me. 1 stuck.
And the other one was conservative, so it was easy for him.
Right.
For her.
Yeah, yeah. For her.
And what are they doing today? Are they still in the game, or they're...
I'm talking about...
They're not even returning your emails.
Social media, it's all... It's like...
Come on, ether.
No friend,
Wow.
They
couldn't even...
No.
Congratulate you on your exploits at American Spectator in the book.
No, that's like that's like one more crucifix to Dracula, The fact that I'm successful as an opinionist, that would just, if they hadn't banned me before, that would have
done. Now, do you get to go to any American Spectator events, or do you wish to, or you don't get invited?
I went to a big one with my then girlfriend. You know about that.
You didn't have to add the then girlfriend. That's the part that makes it. You know, now you lose all credibility.
It was a big deal.
But if it was a really big deal, you wouldn't have taken her.
Sure. Well, yeah, she's beautiful. She made me look good.
No, she made you look uglier. You just said she was beautiful. If she's beautiful, then you look fat. All
I look pretty good myself.
Damn. I got to read some of these books, man. If I'm going to be pitching these books, I got to read them. Otherwise, the thing is, I don't read fiction. It's a terrible feeling.
It would do you good to read Paper Tigers.
I write about the Paper Tiger, the Mao Zedong.
I mentioned reasoning. I cited in the book.
And my book, I've reread the book. It's hard to reread something you wrote because you want to rewrite it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really delve into any of these topics that are common because the book's about reinventing the country, not about regurgitating all the stuff that's failed. So I just point out the stuff that I know that are poignant to me on why I want to reinvent the United States. And I only talk about those things that really upset me about total abject failure. That is law in this country that makes the affect much worse than the effect, which is the spirit of the law. So the paper tiger syndrome, perfect example of my higher intellect. I say to you that there is no difference between the 70-30 ratio in communist China between government-sanctioned private sector events and the 30% that are allowed to make money and being entrepreneurial. The split is around 70-30. And guess what? The United States is no different. only 30% of this country has a chance in hell to make it on their own, self-reliant, without a 9-to-5 job.
I'll give you an exchange in my new novel that would drive, if I still had friends on the other side, which
I haven't given up hope yet. I still might be your friend, but
no. If I still had friends on the other side, the other side of the spectrum, you're on my side of the spectrum, okay. Although not as far.
Whoa, yeah, yeah, you're more conservative than me. Yeah. Sure. Although you do have me on that one subject matter that is a harsh reality for me, as it is for you. You're hell bent on sticking to it and lose elections, and I'm not anymore. Uh-huh. Which is, you know, yeah. The agnostic female. But that's for another day. Go ahead. You were about to say something.
Well, a line I wrote in which one of my heroes, there's two heroes, both men.
In the story.
In the story. And they're private detectives. And they take on this case.
Okay, give us the year.
Right now. This
okay,
year.
Modern era.
2024.
Okay, so it's staged in 2024.
And in the background, there's an exiled president, you know, and
in waiting or exiled out of the country?
He's running. No, he's a
Trumpster is out there.
I mentioned no names.
Woo! But, you got to give him a name sooner or later.
But the incumbent is a befuddled, vegetating, idiot loser.
Really?
Lefty.
Damn.
I'm not mentioning any names. I'm not saying there's such a character.
There's
exists.
No need to give him a name.
Yet. I don't think any. I'm not saying.
Not even later in the book?
I'm not saying any such character exists, but that's the background of the book. And the incumbent is coming back with a vengeance, and he's up in all the polls. And the FBI and the deep state are going crazy because they know if and when this other guy. Pushed the guy out. They used all this skullduggery to get him out in league. With
will he seek vengeance or not?
Well, the point is this.
I don't think he will.
I'm just saying in the book, they're scared to death that the guillotine will start chopping.
Does it give credence to your manuscript that you wrote it before this all really happened in life?
It lets credence that I was so attuned to political reality that I... I predetermined it, and it's happening now exactly as I wrote it. I wrote it,
even though you were a flake for DeSantis.
I was a flake for DeSantis, and I could have lived with it. But
I'm sitting here in front of the guy, know him way before you guys did. I'm telling you, flat out, as I told him, you can't pull this one off, man. This guy's a phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, you were right about that. Anyway, in any case,
my God, I had to say the same thing to Ted. Ted, we're in deep doo doo here.
And you're
a much smarter guy than this guy, and you just can't beat him, man.
In any case, that is the background of the story. So I have two guys, and one is like a intellectual desk guy, ex FBI, you know, analyst.
Pushing freak.
Not a field,
but an investigator.
Not a field guy at all. You know.
So like a prosecutor.
Yeah, and him and his friends were roommates at Georgetown, and the other guy went off to war. His father, he's from a military family.
Okay, and they were high school buddies or
good college roommates.
Okay,
and he went off to and the FBI turned. That even though the ex-FBI guy is kind of a liberal. They just went too far with all their, like, you know.
Imagine all the liberal cops out there and FBI agents.
Yeah, like the Capitol.
Constantly in argument with themselves.
Yeah, like the
Capitol. By themselves on how to treat a criminal. How do you even arrest a guy and prosecute a guy when you're a liberal freak?
Like the Capitol Hill police and the Canadian.
They rationalize everything.
Right. And the UK police right now. The London police is a nightmare. But anyway, in any case, the ex-Army guy, Army Ranger guy, is back, and he's hired to be the partner, you know, the FBI, kind of more of a leg man, more of a, you know, doer. But it's driving him crazy because in just delivering a subpoena, he destroys a restaurant, you know. Just
why? Because?
Because the guy he delivers the subpoena to has his bodyguards attack him. And he fights them off, and then the waiters, it just, you know.
So into bedlam.
Yeah, it's just a bedlam, and it's driving the other guy who runs the company crazy because it's D.C., and he's got to be diplomatic. And in one exchange, you know, he's saying, like, you know, you destroyed a Bloomingdale's. You know, you destroyed the, and Bloomingdale's is a store, right?
Right.
And they say, you know, well, they were paying us to find out who was ripping them off, you know. And he goes, and Cork, the FBI guy, says, you destroyed a $2,000 television set doing it, tackling him. And then the other guy goes, it was playing The View.
Okay, they got the laughs.
Yeah, he's got the laughs. And so at one point, and this is, and you know, maybe my lefty friend would have allowed that.
No, they wouldn't.
But the, what they wouldn't have allowed is, you know, he's explaining to the girl why he quit the Rangers. He goes, because...
Well, the truth is, I mean, when it comes to The View, I think it's a mistake, total mistake, how often lazy brains at Fox attribute stuff to The View. You know, you're giving them an attention. Those are like egg-beating women without jobs, you know, scrambling eggs, watching it on TV. I mean, look at the hour. It's like the soap opera hour. It's just the tackiest form of political intellect out there, and yet I know of The View only because Fox is always repeating about them. Those people are brain dead as they, Jesus Lord.
Well, Neil Cork is the FBI guy. Mark Slade is the ex-Army Ranger guy, and they're really good friends, but they're, you know, it's like oil and water.
Okay, so the ex-Ranger guy is now in the field doing hard work.
He goes out and gets the job done. But a lot of times, you know, it's almost like a bull in a china shop kind of approach.
Okay.
Right, you know. But at one point, he's explaining to this girl. In walks this beautiful co-ed, you know, 20 years old, right? She's a senior at the University of North Carolina. And she walks into their office and says, my boyfriend doesn't want to see me anymore. I want you to find out why. And, you know, the FBI guy, Cork, just says, what, you know, we've got million-dollar clients, you know. And
okay, but when you say million-dollar clients, you're basically saying this is a private investigating unit.
It's a private, but it's just two guys.
Oh, okay, so it's they're ex-FBI, okay.
One guy's ex-FBI,
okay.
The other guy's ex-Army Ranger.
Sorry, audience, you probably were listening, but I obviously missed that point.
So Neil Cork just, you know, he went and walked this incredibly stunning co-ed, and, you know, from the South, UNC.
Southern Belle,
except that she's country. She's more backwoods than Scarlett O'Hara, okay. Right? And she says that. She goes, you know, he came to Washington, and now we were going to live together, and he doesn't want to see me anymore. And you know, Cork, the FBI guy, just said, you know, like, yeah, I got to get her out of here. But the other guy's just looking at her and says,
don't move her anywhere. Leave her right here.
This is an important case. We have to find out who the other guy.
You're the best for the job.
We have to find out who the other guy's cheating. We want this case, you know.
Oh, to win her heart.
Right. And then what Cork says to him is, what you want, you can find online. All right. Anyway, so to get to the point is, he's explaining to the girl later why he quit the Rangers. And he says, you know, because they were lowering your standards, you know, for women. They were admitting women and wannabe women, it's got nothing to do with my politics. It's my hide that I'm worried about, you know.
Yeah, man, if I have to defend you on the battlefield, right. you're going to drag me down.
And then she says, do you have a problem with women in the military?
I do.
And then he says, more than the Chinese will when they take us on, you know. That would have banned me from any Hollywood studio, Hollywood party, anything. Okay.
Just that one line.
No, yeah, but I'm just saying that's the example of the book. Just having the hero, you know, the hero talk like that, you know, and just being a man, you know, and actually acknowledging the beauty.
Now, that occurs in the first two, three, four chapters?
Oh, yeah, no, right away.
Right away.
Right.
So you're setting the stage of everybody's character.
Yeah, yeah.
You're building the character of each person.
Right, yeah, right early. Away chapter. And then we find out what's going on with the boyfriend. And it just keeps rising to a higher level.
Also, it becomes the main case after
all. Oh, yeah, yeah, no. It becomes the main case.
Whoa.
And it turns out to be...
So what was very spontaneous, trying to win the woman over,
right,
becomes actual a real case.
Exactly.
And no one to pay.
Exactly.
No one can pay them.
It turns out to be nation-threatening case, you know.
And this guy no longer wants to be with her for this reason or for...
No, I didn't say he doesn't want to be with her.
Well, didn't he want to break up?
No, he's explaining to the woman why he quit the girl that he's that he's lusting after. He's explaining.
Yeah, but this woman just broke up with a guy. That guy ended up being a killer, or
you have to
read the book.
You have to read the book. Yeah.
Okay.
The guy's a young guy. He's a legislative.
But he's pivotal to the storyline, or no? Or he kind of goes away after a while.
He's an important cog in the story.
Okay.
Yeah, the story goes to the highest level possible. You know, this trivial case only in Washington can become a national security.
Implications.
Right. Yeah. So that was my point in writing it, and so I got today. I mean, yesterday.
So you create like a new definition for the Paper Tiger. That's what annoys.
No, Paper Tigers was an old book that's already out. You can buy from Amazon or Barnes and Noble. You know, Paper Tigers by Lou Aguilar. It's a terrific. Great American novel.
I'm completely shocked. No, this is, okay, so what's the name of this one?
The Apocalypse Mask.
Oh, that you said that already.
The Apocalypse Mask.
I'm having trouble.
It's coming out this fall.
That's the problem of not reading any of his books.
So I got the edit of their, you know, of my, you know, I sent the manuscript. I got the edit with like, you know, what about this? How about this? You know, and I've been working on it. And I was getting to the point that right. What was I watching? Oh, okay. And then I stopped, and on television, on Turner Classic Movies, which is pretty much 80% of my viewing, I watch nothing new. I watch classic movies and news, basically. But the classic movies, I mean, there's nothing on television. And there's nothing at the movies that's even remotely as competent as these movies that they play on.
And most of them are black and white.
A lot of them are, but you know, The Godfather's on next week. You know, it's just
you're waiting for that one.
Yeah, but anyway, it's a wonderful. And I wrote one of my columns about that.
How many times have you seen The Passion of the Christ?
I haven't seen it. I haven't.
And he calls himself conservative.
I haven't seen it because I know. I mean, it's. I don't want to put myself through that.
You got to put yourself through it. As a Catholic, it's an obligation.
Okay, but I know.
You have to. It's the finest articulation of the suffering.
There's no question, and Mel Gibson is a genius.
And he dropped $10 million just to get it going.
Of his own pocket, yeah.
Nobody would make it.
Right. And that's a great story.
And JC, Jesus Christ, his name is Jim Caviezel. He suffered, I just recently found this out, during this Lent. Not only was he struck by lightning, suffered hypothermia, and almost died. Had to be taken off the cross twice just to go to the hospital. Each time... gets out of the hospital to remain on the set and do the scene, and that's a fact. But he was told by Gibson, "Hey man, if you take this role, don't expect to ever work again."
and they're
but
pretty
guess
much
what else happened? 2 open heart surgeries. Holy moly!
And so but there's a codicil to that story, an ending, because. He would get work afterward, but never again a big Hollywood A-list production, okay?
Yeah, that means he didn't get work.
Right, right.
He had to settle for other things.
So he did settle. He took this part in this little indie movie that, you know, the whole budget of the movie would...
one of those Angel Studio movies?
The whole budget of the movie would pay for Brad Pitt's hairstyle in a movie, you know. But he did this movie, and it turned out to be the Sound of Freedom.
Sound of Freedom.
And it made $1 zillion, and it starred him. So he has 2 indie movies under his belt, one that made $1 billion, and then this one, yeah. So
proportional to its investment, right. The same kind of money.
Right. So that's a good legacy to have.
Yeah, I think God will bestow good things upon him forever. Yeah, yeah. He's now a pastor. He's Catholic, actually. He's actually pastoring out there because he's not a priest. But he's actually spreading the word. It's very impressive. So that was my segue to your Easter rabbit trick. And we're going to play your article now. Are you going to give us a snippet of what's going on here or what?
Well, it's just, it's funny because as I sat down to write my column, the news came right across my media about International Day of Trans.
Did Trump knock it out of the park the other day or what?
Trans visibility.
When he gave the speech, and we're going to have a Christian visibility day.
So on Easter Sunday, on my computer, the story that I was groping around the right just boom. And that's what I talked about.
Oh, you use the word groping and everything. Mm. Oh, felicidad. All right, here we go.
Just a quick word from our sponsor.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Easter rabbit trick. All seems lost, as in the days following the crucifixion. But the faithless will lose in the end. Easter rabbit trick. All seems lost, as in the days following the crucifixion. But the faithless will lose in the end.
I think we're having technical difficulties.
I think it's not your fault.
The site is down or something.
So I'll have to read it, okay?
Oh my God! Here we go.
I'll have to read it.
Let's see it one more try.
No, it's done.
Just a quick word from our sponsor.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
That's his ex-girlfriend, by the way, Judy.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, oh, Louie, take it easy, mama's Judy. Bringing home the bacon.
The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Easter rabbit trick. All seems lost, as in the days following the crucifixion. But the faithless will lose in the end.
You're going to have to read it. Third try was a charm.
Ready?
Maybe. Nope. Not more ready.
Tell me when.
Go for it.
Last Good Friday, I visited the chapel of my church, conveniently located on the Florida island where I live. It's one of only six in the Miami area that houses the living host for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A series of mortal setbacks to loved ones over the past 5 years, including my mother's cancer, cured, the death of her beloved companion, the death of my ex-girlfriend's only son, and other family health issues, have considerably elongated my prayer list. So I try to seek help from the Lord every evening in His presence. But on Good Friday, I found the sepulcher empty and the adoring twin angels beside it covered by purple mourning cloth. And I thought, what a perfect reflection of not only this holy weekend, but of our time, the perceived absence of Christ. Most people agree that the country is in a dark age, as do I, the bleakest in my lifetime. Depression in young people is spiking, particularly among females, as their once clear life purpose, even unalterable sexuality, come under divisive Marxist attack. And boys, especially white boys, get taught they will become toxic men with few role models to indicate the opposite. Too many religious leaders, including the successor to Apostle Peter, either accept or embrace this demonism. They may not be able to recruit more worshipers, but they can certainly weaken the institutions. A new Gallup poll shows a steep decline in religious observation across the spectrum. According to the poll, only 44% of Protestant Christians now attend regular services, with Catholics at an abysmal 33%. Outspoken traditionalist churchmen like Bishop Joseph Strickland, the Vatican-displaced bishop of Tyler, Texas, are bravely and accurately blaming the hierarchy. Up there is an agenda that is actually gradually pulling all these people away from faith and towards communism, Strickland told Red State. It all evokes the days following the crucifixion, when the faithful all seemed lost. The man they had forsaken their past lives to follow had been torturously executed, leaving them at the mercy of the rabble that condemned him. Yet, unlike in Israel, where those events took place 2,000 years ago, when the doors were shut and the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, John 20:19, today, both Jews and Christians face equal persecution by the state and the godless activists in command of it. All over America, mobs educated by the Judeo-Christian tradition scream for the extermination of the nation that gave birth to it and the people who further it, in favor of the murderous savages with whom they share nothing other than contempt for Western civilization. That in the world they're pushing for, they will be the first to go, see, queers for Palestine, never occurs to them. So blinded are they by hate. While the fools nominally leading this country bend to their will, both out of desperation to retain power and loathing for religious conservatives. Last Monday, the United States abstained on a United Nations Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Palestine, which allowed the resolution to pass. The inept Biden administration knew this would cripple Israel from forestalling another large-scale Jewish massacre like that of October 7th. But as usual, Democratic Party politics took precedence over good and evil. Another recent Gallup poll shows Americans disapprove of Israeli military action in Gaza, 55% to 36%. Among Democrats, a stunning 75% to 18%, following relentless anti-Israel media bombardment. Unfortunately for the longtime U.S. ally, abandoning the righteous course for voters is the left's modus operandi. So is hostility to Christians in full display this Easter. The White House is prohibiting children of National Guard personnel from submitting religious-themed Easter eggs for the 2024 Celebrating National Guard Families event. The event flyer states that Easter egg design submissions must not include any questionable content, religious symbols, overtly religious symbols, or partisan political statements. Because, to the progressive mind, religious symbols equal questionable content and partisan political statements. Consequently, any illustrative reference to the reason for the holiday, such as an empty cave tomb, would be strictly forbidden. It gets worse, or better, because the Biden regime doesn't realize that, despite the decline in religious worship, the tide has turned against one leftist delusion. Instead, Biden just declared March 31st, Easter Sunday, Transgender Day of Visibility. In Biden land, kids can't depict or suggest the resurrection of the Lord, yet he will celebrate the fantasy that men can become women or vice versa, with all the surgical butchery required to fail miserably in the attempt. His idiocy opened the politically endangered president not only to Christian outrage, but to Republican mockery. Isn't every day at the White House Transgender Day of Visibility? Tweeted Harmet K. Dillon, vice president of the Republican National Lawyers Association. The ridiculous Admiral Rachel Richard Levine may agree with this. But the faithful will lose in the end. It will be the ultimate Easter rabbit trick. Beginning this Sunday, when I visit the chapel, the host will be in the sepulcher, and the world will realize what the faithful did 2,000 years ago on the road to Emmaus, that the Lord has risen and walks among us.
And he's risen indeed. Well, so, that was moving.
Thank you.
Somewhat annoying. But nevertheless, I mean, when people don't want to even look at the past, and this is to you, my friend Barry Goldmeyer, who's going to come in here and talk about this in depth, a Jewish, businessman extraordinaire from New York who's been living on the Key for many years, and I've known him for years, and he's older in his age, and he's really upset with October the 7th, and it sprung him from his socks into the radio station.
Good.
And he says, you know what? I'm tired of shutting up. It's time for my partner and I to just realize that although we disagree, I have to speak up. And he has some historical documents he's going to share with me at a later date, hopefully this Friday. Hopefully. Or if not, at a time of his choosing and when he feels right. And I shared with him how I, why I knew that the whole Palestinian is not indigenous to the area. It's a name given to them by Romans. It's a name that actually is named after the slaves that these tribesmen had over the Jew. The Jew was actually the Palestinian. And it, they were Philistines. And then it was proven by other work that I read about the ancestral archives being more Phoenician and Greek and Jew, and there were no Muslims. All the Muslims were tribesmen. They come in and out of the Kingdom of Israel, enslaving them. And the truth is, what it would attract them to this area was the Jews' success at farming, at property ownership, at tradesmen, at negotiations. That's why the Phoenicians would come across the sea to negotiate with them, to actually get bigger, fatter cattle, lamb, and other animals, livestock, because they knew how to farm. And it's so sad. And then in modern time, this terrible person called Amin al-Hassini was basically in bed with the Nazis. And he basically created and then created the Holocaust with the Fuhrer. So this is what I'm going to share with you guys.
They're in a bad way right now. I'm so sorry. They were under enough duress before, but after the death of the
who's they? What? Be very specific.
Israel, the Israel.
They are going through a tough time.
They're
right?
going through a tough
Hello,
time.
Hello, but it's nothing for them.
Because of the kitchen people that just got killed by the Israeli bomb.
Yeah, the workers, social workers.
Yeah, so it's social, and that, you know, and you can't avoid that, but.
Yeah, misidentified. Could have been someone, double agent, setting Israel up.
It's just that they have to finish it, and they may not be able to, you know?
I believe. My theory, I will speak after the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. Uh-huh. This guy is beyond suckeroid. Okay? Uh-huh. He's a total jerk off.
Yeah.
And I'll give you the dates and times in a second. And I just learned this. So this is the part of it that's quite modern because he's the one who got Adolf Hitler to really believe that the Jews had to be eradicated. It's very sad.
December 1942, Berlin's Islamic Central Institute is inaugurated. The inaugural address is given by Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. In it, he rails against the supposed common enemies of Germany and Islam, the Jews, the Americans, and the British. He hails the war as a momentous opportunity for Muslims to free themselves from oppression, an unholy alliance, a marriage of convenience, or a partnership of the like-minded. I'm Spartacus Olson. Welcome to a World War II in real-time bio special. Today, looking at Grand Mufti Amin al-Husseini and the relationship between his version of Islam and Nazism. The Führer's and the Nazis' racism is not just anti-Semitic. They are also no fans of organized religion, sure. He tolerates the Catholic and Protestant churches for political reasons, but he regards both as a threat to Nazi control of society. One would assume that makes Amin al-Husseini a religious leader of the Islamic faith an unlikely ally. But perhaps it is here, as they say, that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And if we look at the Mufti's journey from Jerusalem to Berlin, it does look that way. In May 1921, the British authorities in Mandatory Palestine appoint him Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. He's named chairman of the Palestine Supreme Muslim Council a year later. These roles give him control over the mandate's Sharia courts, religious funding and endowments, and over some of the holiest sites in Islam. It grants him great influence over the Muslim community in Palestine, and he soon emerges as a figurehead for Muslims across the globe. In hindsight, it might look strange that the British choose him specifically, but in 1921, he is thought of as a moderate. Yes, he's an Arab nationalist who served as a recruiter for the Arab revolt against the Ottomans in 1916, but he's also been willing to work with the imperial authorities. Before the revolt, he had served in the Ottoman army before switching allegiance to the British. Moreover, he hails from a wealthy and influential family benefiting from colonial rule, and it is hoped that he will maintain the imperial status quo. But these are volatile times in the Middle East.
We don't want to lose people.
Yeah, he says we're losing our audience because I'm educating you guys.
No, yes.
Can you believe it? as if he wrote a better book than me?
Anyway.
See the difference?
The Gallup poll just came out today.
Tonight he's going to talk about the Gallup poll. Remember, Gallup polls are polls of the idiot society that we have become.
This is a shift from 2 years ago. Okay?
A big shift, like if our brains actually shifted. They have not, but go ahead. Speak your piece. I will... More about Amin al-Husseini after the show. Go for it.
Can manage the government effectively. Trump, 49%. Biden, 39%.
As if that's going to drive someone to the polls. Okay.
Is likable. Biden, 57%. Trump, 37%.
That's incredible.
Trump is down 24.
They like a liar, and they don't like the truth teller.
But he is down nine. He is down nine from the 2 years ago in likability.
How many people call me to tell me, hey, his stock is down. His stock is down.
And Trump is still not likable.
He's not coming over for dinner. Jesus.
But, okay. Displays good judgment in a crisis. Trump, 45%, Biden, 40%.
See, they put him almost par.
No.
Come on, man.
That's not.
That's ridiculous.
All right. Now, you know about the Wall Street Journal poll.
I don't know. I don't read the polls because I laugh at them. Sometimes they throw them at me because I'm watching something.
But these are the same.
But I don't go seek the polls
but
to find
are the
out.
Same, these are the same polls that were fairly close.
Yeah, the ones that had Al Gore beating Bush by a lot.
Not Al Gore, Biden.
All these polls show that we're losing. Trump didn't stand a chance against Hillary in those polls. You know it.
No, I know that.
Ah, well, and you keep on talking about polls, and you tell me we're losing our audience, and like if they really give a hoot about your poll.
They
as
do.
As opposed to the education that I'm offering them.
They do because
I found this on my own to share it today. Okay, I have other days.
Okay,
you know?
Here we go.
I'm going to call your girlfriend. We're going to do a show together.
Here we go. Ready, people out there? Donald Trump is leading President Biden in 6 of the 7 most competitive states. There's a brand new poll from the Wall Street Journal, which has problems like everybody else does in the media. But, let's go with it. The poll of the election's main battleground shows Trump holding leads between 2 and 8% in 6 states: Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, and North Carolina.
Those are the swing states.
Yeah. Anyway, unfortunately I'm not subscribed to the Wall Street Journal, so I can't get the rest of the story. But
so why don't you call one of your Hollywood friends? They probably subscribe to the Russian.
Well, let me just see if somebody else has picked it up.
See, so now you made me turn off this really informative biography, basically. And
all right, here we go.
Your whole poll thing just flopped in my face. Don't have enough information.
All right.
Convince these people that
these people remain undecided. Okay, the survey asked that both Biden and Trump's approval.
See what I mean? It's all psychobabble.
Yeah.
And on top of that, these polls are very driven to get the results that they seek, depending on who's funding the poll, or what show or what network has hired these pollsters to do this poll. And the whole thing's a racket. Plus, think about it. Who in the hell answers a poll on a cell phone?
Stop it. Let me continue.
Landline people will answer a poll. Guess what? They're unemployed. They're answering a poll on a landline.
Okay, here we go. To win re-election, Biden will need to retain the blue wall, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. He flipped in 2020. Trump holds a 2-point lead in Michigan, which is incredible. I mean, Michigan, incredible. And, you know, I don't know how many of those are the Muslims.
They're not going to vote for Trump.
Right, yeah.
Period.
And a 3-point lead. But if they don't vote for Biden, that's
they could stay home.
Yeah.
They could stay home.
A 3-point lead in Pennsylvania.
I would say that more than half the people that you see marching in the streets aren't even registered voters.
Okay. Biden also carried Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona. All three of those are Trump is like pulling away in those three states.
I don't believe it.
Okay. I'm not saying to believe it. I'm just saying. Despite briefly running for the Democratic nomination,
I'm the Debbie Downer of Trump's re-election.
Trump holds an advantage on
I don't have faith in the American people.
The economy, the border, and inflation. Biden has an edge on...
On RFK?
Abortion.
I don't want to go there. We promised we wouldn't go there. With Radio Socialists, we go down the abortion rabbit hole all the time. The hell with it. If women, by the way, ladies, I will say this, though. You better start talking to your fellow ladies and decide whether your country's more important or your right to abort is more important. Because if you vote on that single issue, you're going to lose your country.
But the immigration, it was not at this level.
Ask the Europeans.
Anyway.
They're socialists as all hell. We're already socialists. Think about it. We already split up our real estate taxes for public school. Half of our real estate taxes
go
to public school. That's socialized
But here's the big
deal. We have socialized education. Our university systems are owned by the government for the most part. We're a socialist country. Plus, we tax income and not, including wages, not profit. We tax income. In other words, we call wages and income the same. That's right out of the Communist Manifesto. Go ahead.
Here's the big deal, though.
It's called income tax.
The clock is ticking. It's April already. The space to maneuver is getting shorter. You know, for the only thing left is the conventions. You know, the only thing that may change, other than some trauma, and they're trying. I mean, they're censoring. They're doing. FBI's calling people.
Wouldn't it be cool? Just for a self-respect standpoint, that the Democrats stand up at convention and kick Joe Biden out of there.
That wouldn't be cool. That would be scary.
It would be scary, but you're afraid of that. I'm not.
No, I am.
Yeah, because I don't think anybody can really beat Trump if they don't rig the election, and I think they're going to rig it.
But the difference is you can get this excitement thing going, you know, at the wrong time, which is probably what they're going to do.
And who would that person be?
It'll be some young buck that
it won't be Newsom and it won't be Michelle Obama.
Right,
Imagine Michelle, all of a sudden, Mike stands up and
says... Forget me. I don't even know what time she would get... I hope she does jump in because she'd get crushed. There's already been polls about it.
So Newsom as well or no?
Yeah, Newsom would get... Because California is in such...
So you think like a guy like Phillips could come out of nowhere?
They've got some young, like, articulate guys that'll pull up and
Who, man? It would have to be a governor or...
But the point is that there'd be...
Do they have a young governor that's handsome and willing? I don't think so.
They've got...
I'm trying to think of one that comes to mind, but I don't think they have
one. They got a couple of black guys.
Always told you guys, and I told this before... We're on 32 shows together. I feel like I'm married to this Lou guy. I'm going to start calling him Luisa soon. Okay. I do believe that their best liberal is Charlie Crist. And I've always said...
Charlie Crist?
I think he...
That guy's the biggest loser in America.
Because he's an ex-Republican, and I know him personally.
No, because he's like just a wet blanket of nothing.
People...
No, don't even... The
Democrats could fall in love with him.
They do. They fall in love with him every year. He tries for something else.
Well, DeSantis kicked his butt.
Everybody kicked his butt.
No, he was elected Congressman.
Rick Scott kicked his butt.
No.
Rick Scott kicked his butt.
No. Charlie Crist had two terms as Florida's governor.
Who kicked his butt?
Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio kicked his butt. I'm sorry.
Right. As a standing governor.
Right.
Sitting governor who ran for Senate.
I would pray.
I think the Democrats could take him in the convention.
I would pray for Charlie Crist.
Yeah, but I always thought that he could come out of nowhere and lead the... I'm not saying
you might victory. As well say Beto.
No, Beto already gave his best shot.
Well, what do you think Charlie Crist did?
Charlie Crist never ran for president.
He's been kicked.
And nobody on the stage.
He's been kicked out of every office.
He wasn't kicked out. He just ran for office and lost. He switched parties. Shame on him. But Reagan, you know, he's
who else? Parties. Who else?
The snake oil Newsom.
Oh, that'd be great. Go for it. Go for it.
Imagine Shifty showing up there. No, I'm just joking.
Hillary.
I don't think Hillary either because she already knows what results she'll get. She'll do worse now. There's, I'm trying to think of a Democratic senator that's worth a damn that could stand up and who's somewhat rational. And the first thing a Democrat must do in order to stand a chance against Trump and our realities today is for them to admit that they can't govern. And how do you win an election?
We're probably not going to get a VP name until the convention.
The most impressive person in the Democratic podium that year was Tulsi Gabbard. And she got 1%.
Yeah, no, Tulsi's great.
She was really...
But she's just not conservative enough to... She's not conservative.
No, she could never beat Trump. I don't think anybody...
No, I'm talking about as VP. We're talking VP.
No. I'm not. I'm talking about who they would come out...
Yeah, no, forget Tulsi.
In a convention. No,
Tulsi would be tough, though.
I think my VPs are really down just to two.
Who?
Governor Abbott and...
Gabbard! No!
Because it's symbolic of...
Abbott just made a vital, crucial error.
What? Did the courts go against his law?
No. No, he made a crucial error.
What?
The Jewish protection hate bill.
Okay, right? give the audience some details.
He's pushing for hate speech against Jews to be criminal, like almost a lefty move, you know?
Oh, kind of like what they did in Scotland.
Right. And, you know, his heart's in...
But at the same time, I think Americans would understand that as we got to tamper down this anti-Semitism.
No.
Because it led to atrocities.
You let them talk and you tamper down by you don't... Once
still got to infiltrate their groups.
Once you put opinion as a crime, you're down...
But does it have to be that stale and stark?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely
you
does.
You believe that his law is that stale and that stark?
Well,
elaborate further. The law says what?
It's in the ether right now, you know.
So what makes you think that would impact him being vice president? The symbolism of Trump standing...
It's an anti-free speech move. Free speech is the most important thing we have at this particular time, more important than ever.
We can see it.
Ever. Because it's never been under attack as blatantly as it is right now.
And it costs $44 billion to find out the truth.
Right. So that's a bad move. He's out. He's out of the running.
I think he's a symbol of the
wall. He's out of the running.
He's a symbol of the wall.
He's out of the running because of this. It was a bad move.
I don't think so.
No, anyway.
And then my second pick
Huckabee.
Would be...
Huckabee. I'm sorry. Huckabee's not going to make it.
She's fantastic vice president.
No.
And loyal.
No.
And holy roller. Plus...
She's all that. She won't excite...
I believe also a cancer survivor.
She won't excite anybody.
No, I don't think you want a vice president
to
excite you anymore.
No, yes, you do.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you do.
Tell me what president got elected because of their vice president. Name one. You can't.
Because they've been lame ass.
They're just not their role.
They've been lame
Nobody
ass.
Elects a president based on their vice president. No one, period. Not even the home state. Nothing. Zero. But Trump did say something that was accurate, and all presidents would agree with him. You got to pick someone who can... get off and running if something tragic happens to the president.
And that would be?
I believe it would be Huckabee Sanders or Abbott.
No, none of those.
Yeah.
None of those.
Because it can't be Byron Reynolds that you suggested a week
Byron
ago.
Byron Donalds.
Byron or Donalds. Oh, did I mean? I meant to say Burt Reynolds. No, Byron Donalds. He's, you know, amateur, you know, insurance salesman, you know, 5 years ago.
Ron?
Ron DeSantis, because he's from the same state, Marco Rubio and Ron DeSantis would have to be in the administration, but couldn't be VP.
I don't think
Trump could handle Ron, because Ron is a big boy with big boy pants.
Yeah.
I do think you got to bring him into the administration somehow.
No.
I would love to see Ted Cruz as Attorney General, but would he give up his Senate seat for that?
Well, he's got to win re-election first.
Right. And he'd be a fantastic AG.
Oh, yeah, he would.
And he probably would give Trump all the sticks and stones he needs to break all their bones.
And he'd be great.
He'd go after Comey, Susan Rice.
He'd be great.
Loretta Lynch.
Yeah.
All those freaks, man. Yeah. Oh, Rothstein has been hiding out. The other guy, McCabe. The list is long. What about that other jerk-off whose wife was a go-between for the Russian collusion that Hillary paid for something GPS? That woman and her husband, who was FBI.
Yeah.
He was DOJ. I think he was Oriental.
What about J.D. Vance?
He's a safe pick.
Yeah.
He's a safe pick, and he's not going anywhere.
Eloquent, articulate, and...
Pretty novice to the political world, so he would
And
probably,
been around, ex-Marine...
Yeah, I think he's deliberate enough that he'd pull it off. He's probably the only person that outside of my list that I could accept and would do a good job.
Vivek?
No, he's a quack. a wealthy quack, but he's a quack.
No, he's good.
He'd be good at taking on a department like I think Trump misused Ben Carson at HUD.
Not exciting. I mean, good
no,
guy.
No, he should have put him in the NHH, got rid of Fauci, that kind of
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah. Much better.
Yeah, imagine Carson during COVID.
During COVID, he would have
flipped out and told everybody to go pound sand.
He would have been awesome.
I mean, there's a lot of things that Trump
he messed
disappointed.
Up on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he messed up on.
His including selection, Jeff Sessions.
Including even the campaign. Oh, God.
What a disaster.
But even the other guy, you know, the fat
well,
guy.
He left Comey too long?
No, the fat guy.
You mean Chris Christie?
No, the fat AG.
Oh, Bill Barr.
Yeah, traitor.
Yeah, Bill Barr was sent
traitor. Generals, traitors.
But understand where Bill Barr came from.
Yeah.
It was a favor he asked of the Bushes.
Yeah.
Send me someone to get this Mueller off my back.
Yeah.
And the Bushes go, okay, but everybody's off. Nobody's prosecuted.
He didn't help.
No, he did. He got everybody off.
He didn't help. And
Bill made sure that nobody got prosecuted by anybody.
And
notice how he threw the special counsel in there. He got nothing.
He was bad.
What was the guy's name? The special to investigate the investigators.
The only guy I liked was the Secretary of State.
Pompeo.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, we had to go through several of them.
Who
was his first?
That first guy was that rich loser guy.
The petroleum dude.
Yeah, oh my God.
Bro, that guy was looking for big deals.
But Trump wasn't expecting the deluge that was about to fall on him. You know, that guy
really went into the wind.
He
went right back to the private sector. Right?
Yeah.
He went right back to Exxon, I believe.
Yeah, he made some serious. I don't think he's going to make those mistakes again.
Yeah, I think it was some part of me knows that Trump does things to disguise what he's really up to. He likes to muddy the water so he can do whatever the hell he wants. And the more you talk about these people, he can always fire them, you know. So he throws you out there. I don't know how Pompeo feels about his years with Trump. I don't know if he's still loyal to Trump. I don't know if he would accept the position again. The Secretary of State.
We're not gonna talk. He's not gonna get it. So we don't want. We don't want anybody.
So you don't think Pompeo will be even a consideration?
We don't want anybody in the last. No, nobody.
Because he also blew it with Bolton turned on him.
Yeah, yeah. But all those guys were traitors. You know.
I would send Bolton to Ambassador to Siberia. or actually put him in a hospital.
I would go after. I don't know about Bolton, but I would go after the generals, the FBI guys. I mean, they were allowed to skip.
I wouldn't touch the generals. That'll get you in trouble.
Milley? Vic Vindman?
Vindman brothers, those are lower on the poll. Boy, when they were testifying, I'm saying, bro, off with their heads, man. What a treasonous bunch those two are.
They
disclosed conversations after Trump with other heads of state.
Merrick Garland, he'd be the first guy I'd go after. Merrick Garland?
I would go after Comey, man.
The most corrupt... Disgusting.
No, I go after Comey, man. What Comey, when he had him on the signatures of the warrants, him and Rothstein, they deserved their heads on the chopping
block. No, but Merrick Garland, the most corrupt, you know.
Yeah, but even
partisan.
But, Those are feelings, man. But
no, they're not feelings.
How the hell would you pin Garlic on something corrupt? You have to get him on something.
Wait, once you have the power.
No, man, you got to catch him on something. Whereas Coleman and Rothstein signed the warrants.
Mayorkas?
What's the name of the warrants again? From the Patriot Act? Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know.
The FISA Court. FISA Court. Save my soul. I pulled it off. They got FISA Court violations because they didn't check every angle of why they asked for these search warrants. And if they did check, they're guilty. They can prove that and get rid of both of them and put them in the slammer. I think the American people need to see Comey and Rothstein in handcuffs.
That would be
a wonderful.
I don't think handcuffs. I just think jail.
Well, jumpsuits basically. I mean, of course, in a perfect world, they'd also have Hillary and Obama.
Well, anyway, let's see what the polls and let's see how things are next week.
Okay, sweetheart. Okay. His girlfriend's calling him on the phone.
Actually, she is.
See, he admits it. See, he's been busted. The guy will not hammer out the rusty nail. I'll end on that note. But as I promised you, I will continue the Nazi Islam Alliance.
Thank you for listening. Please, spectator.org for the best political writing and analysis around right now. There is. And please join it.
Lou Aguilar on the American Spectator.
Yes.
And look for Lou on the alphabet.
And
he's over there closer to Z than he is to A, but he's there.
And you'll get great intelligent articles by other people. And
a wonderful cast. Yeah. Absolutely. You want to become a conservative, you want to understand how they think, start with the American Spectator. That plug I can give. So say to my friends, enjoy the Nazi Islam Alliance. There's another 12 minutes of it. Take care. Stay free.
War. The British promised Emir Faisal, one of the emerging leaders of a pan-Arabic federation, that they would get their own country. Arabism, the idea of a united ethnic Arab nation, had emerged at the end of the 19th century. It was one of the driving factors that enabled the British to unite the Arab tribes against Ottoman rule. In parallel, Zionism, the idea of an ethnic Jewish state, was arising. After centuries of persecution in Europe, where most Jews now lived, the Zionists sought a national haven for their people. Among a variety of proposals, most eventually concentrated on Palestine, the birthplace of Judaism and still home to a 5% Jewish minority. While many Arab leaders opposed the idea, the Balfour Declaration of 1917 was issued by the British, offering a Jewish state within what would become the British Mandate in Palestine. With these British promises in 1919, Faisal met with Chaim Weizmann, the Zionist leader who had negotiated the Balfour Declaration, and made an agreement that guaranteed a Jewish state within a new Arabic federation, with Faisal demanding that the Jewish state would stay within the area of the Arab independence and be conditioned on such independence. Although the Zionists submit the agreement to the Paris Peace Conference without Faisal's conditions, Faisal manages to forge an agreement with the other Arab leaders, and it looks like both the Arab Federation and the Jewish state might become reality. But it's an illusion. The British, under pressure by the French and their interests in the Middle East, renege on their promises to both Faisal and to Weizmann. And the whole thing comes apart around the same time as al-Husseini is appointed Grand Mufti. In the conflict that ensues, the French and British use rule by division by promising various Arab factions different levels of independence, pitting them against each other, and creating an environment where ethnic changes, including Jewish immigration, becomes a greater and greater perceived threat to the status quo. It also works with al-Husseini, who plays along with British rule, but begins to agitate heavily against Jewish immigration to Palestine. In 1928, his Supreme Muslim Council spreads rumors of a Zionist plot to destroy the Muslim holy sites on Temple Mount. These lead to violent clashes a year later, with 113 Jews and 116 Arabs killed in August 1929. In December 1931, he organizes a World Islamic Congress in Jerusalem, calling for a boycott on trade with Jews and declaring Zionism an aggression detrimental to Muslim well-being. The conflict is continuously seeded by the British, still tolerating limited Jewish immigration to Palestine, with both Zionists and Arabists increasingly vocal and violent in their demands. With the British, as always unwilling to commit fully to one side, the Mufti sends out feelers to Hitler instead. A week after the passing of the Enabling Act in March 1933, the Mufti meets Heinrich Wolff, the German consul general in Jerusalem. Wolff's record of the meeting is as follows. The Mufti made detailed statements to me today to the effect that Muslims inside and outside of Palestine salute the new regime in Germany and hope for the spread of fascist and anti-democratic leadership to other countries. A month later, at a second meeting near the Dead Sea, the Mufti and Palestinian sheikhs express approval of the anti-Jewish measures enacted in Germany. Still, at this point, the relationship is limited to mutual rhetorical support. Al-Husseini despises the Jews, but would still rather see a political than military solution. In 1933, he refuses a request by Muhammad al-Khazam, a Syrian preacher and Arab nationalist, to join a jihad against the Jews and British. On the other side, Nazi Germany has little desire to be seen meddling in Middle Eastern politics. They are now solving their Jewish question by encouraging Jewish immigration to Palestine. Upsetting the British would jeopardize this. As such, in June 1933, they declined to assist with setting up a Nazi-inspired Arab nationalist party. But al-Husseini will only sit on the fence for so long. By the end of 1935, the situation in Palestine is deteriorating rapidly. Al-Khazam is shot dead by British police in November and becomes a martyr for the cause. The next year, on April 19th, a general strike is called. Husseini initially dithers, but on the 25th, he takes leadership of the newly formed Arab Higher Committee, which leads the protest and calls for an end to Jewish immigration. This Arab revolt quickly descends into Muslim versus Jewish violence. The British outlaw the Higher Committee and issue a warrant for al-Husseini's arrest in July. He flees Palestine in October 1937. Husseini finds refuge in Syria and Lebanon under French mandate. Under pressure from French authorities, he flees to Iraq in October 1939. It's here that he once again crosses into the Axis orbit. Iraq is an independent monarchy headed by a pro-British regent. But many government ministers and army officers are pro-German, and the country has become a haven for exiled nationalist leaders. Al-Husseini soon falls in with a group of army officers under Rashid Ali al-Gailani, who are planning a coup. In preparation, al-Husseini sends his private secretary to Berlin in January 1941 with a letter to Hitler. He stresses the role that a pro-German Iraq could play in disrupting British communications and in supplying oil to the Reich. With German troops fighting in North Africa, Hitler is interested. He responds on April 3rd that he recognizes and supports Arab independence and that if Arabs were to fight the British, he would provide military assistance. The coup breaks out on April 1st. With Hitler's attention on the upcoming invasion of the Soviet Union, he sends little more than a token contribution from the Luftwaffe, along with some shipments of ammunition. The plotters are initially successful. Rashid Ali installs himself as prime minister, but they are decisively defeated by the British and Transjordanian forces in May. In the aftermath, al-Husseini flees Iraq. He makes his way through Iran, Turkey, and Italy and arrives in Berlin on November 6th. On the 28th, he is invited to meet Hitler. The two men establish their common enemies, the British, the Jews, and the Bolsheviks. Husseini assures Hitler that Arabs are ready to cooperate with Germany with all their hearts. Hitler, however, refuses to give a written commitment guaranteeing future Arab, particularly Palestinian, independence. Hitler states that it's too early for these considerations, but that once Germany has destroyed Judeo-Bolshevism in Europe, the Reich's objectives will be to destroy the Jewish element in the Arab world. Far more interesting to Hitler and the Nazis than any notion of Arab independence is Husseini's potential as an anti-British propagandist. The Germans have already been targeting the Muslim world with propaganda since 1939. In that year, an Arabic language radio station was established in Siezen, a small town southwest of Berlin, which boasts one of the most powerful shortwave radio transmitters in existence. The station's Berlin in Arabic and Voice of Free Arabism target the estimated 90,000 shortwave radios present in the Middle East and North Africa. Radio is crucial to propaganda in the region as adult literacy is very low. Radios are often installed in cafes, markets, and other public places and reach a large audience. The stations themselves are staffed by German Middle East scholars and by native Arabic speakers. The programs, which always start with a reading of Quranic verses, aim to establish Germany's war as a battle against the joint enemies of Nazism and Islam. Al-Husseini soon makes himself central to this propaganda effort. In summer 1942, Ribbentrop decides to step up the German propaganda to coincide with Rommel's success in North Africa. On June 16th, Husseini makes a broadcast in which he welcomes the forthcoming defeat of the British, who are working together with Jewish capitalism. It's not just the radio either. In July, 200,000 leaflets are flown to North Africa with an appeal by Husseini for Muslims to join the Axis cause. A broadcast on July 7th is typical of the German calls to arms. According to the Muslim religion, the defense of your life is a duty which can only be fulfilled by annihilating the Jews. Kill the Jews, burn their property, destroy their stores, annihilate these base supporters of British imperialism. Your sole hope of salvation lies in annihilating the Jews before they annihilate you. Other than an apparent mutual hatred for Jews, why should Muslims support the Nazis? Well, the propagandists try and draw a supposed commonality between Nazism and Islam. Hitler retains the view that Arabs are racially inferior, but he does have some admiration for Islam as a religion. It's a very one-dimensional understanding of it, and he picks and chooses the bits which fit in with his worldview. But he believes it to embody values of strength, discipline, practicality, and community, qualities that he sees as central to Nazism. Perhaps in justification of his genocidal expansionism, Hitler admires Islam as a religion that had spread the faith by the sword. At least, that's according to Albert Speer after the war. On the whole, though, the Nazis see the Muslim population as a source of manpower and little more. Thus, when the Allies land in North Africa, propaganda efforts are redoubled. Evoking memories of the Crusades, Axis propaganda frames Operation Torch as an aggression by the Anglo-Saxon and Jewish world against the Arab Muslims. On November 11th, broadcasting from Rome on Radio Bari, the Italian propaganda radio, Husseini warns that if the invasion is not repelled, the Jews will establish their national home not only in Syria, Lebanon, and Transjordan and Egypt, but also throughout all the neighboring Arab countries. The Arabs must struggle against the British and the Jews, the deadliest enemies of Islam, shoulder to shoulder with the Axis. This brings us to December and the opening of the Islamic Central Institute. The Foreign Office sees a new institute as a means to cement ties between the Nazi regime and Islam. With the support of exiles such as Al-Husseini, it will also be a propaganda hub. Everything about the opening ceremony is designed with the religious context in mind. The opening day, December 18th, is the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Adha. In attendance are Muslim troops of the Wehrmacht's Azerbaijani Legion. The opening address, approved by Ribbentrop and broadcast across North Africa and the Middle East, is given by Al-Husseini. He calls once more for Muslims to rise up against the Jews and their allies. This war, which has been unleashed by world Judaism, offers Muslims the best opportunity to free themselves from persecution and oppression. The Muslim who fears somebody else besides God or yields to his enemies and places his fate voluntarily in their hands is not a Muslim anymore. There is no God but Allah. But is this propaganda making any difference? Well, not really. Far more Muslims will serve in the armies of the British Empire and the Free French than will ever heed the call of Al-Husseini and Hitler. The Axis can produce all the propaganda in the world, but they've been in North Africa for 2.5 years now, and they still haven't pushed the Allies out. And now, the Allies are turning the tide and landing with huge new forces. How can the Axis claim to be liberators when they look to be losing the war? Husseini will continue his alignment with the Nazis. He will crusade against the Jews, will meet Heinrich Himmler, tour concentration camps, and recruit Muslims into the SS. But right now his words must be ringing pretty hollow to any sympathizers in Cairo, Benghazi, or East Jerusalem. But what the propaganda most certainly does is to sow further seeds of division that will continue to plague the Mediterranean and Middle East region for many decades to come. If you'd like to learn more about Palestine and the Middle East and the interwar years, then check out our Between Two Wars episode on Zionism, Arabism, and colonialism in the Middle East right here.
If you like our programming on WSQF 94.5 in Key Biscayne, you can also hear us very far away nationwide, WSQFradio.com. And if you like our audio files and our subject matter, subscribe to YouTube, Mac on the Rock Rampage. Take care and stay free.